Hi, I'm Warren Giroux, Senior Investment Consultant with Sightline Wealth Management. We are bringing you a series of conversations with a select group of alternative investment managers Sightline works closely with. These managers specialize in private debt, private mortgages, long and short equity strategies, among others. As part of the discussion, we will touch upon governance, transparency, portfolio positioning, current strategy trends, and future opportunities in the asset class. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm Warren Giroux of Sightline Wealth Management. I'm here today with Nick Capriano, the President and Chief Executive Officer of River Rock Mortgage Corporation. River Rock Mortgage Corporation is a sub-advisor to the Nine Point MIC. Welcome, Nick. I'm glad you're able to join us this morning.
Thank you.
Before we get into what the market looks like and get some color on the landscape, let's like to talk about your portfolio a little bit and get some statistics here. For example, like what is your AUM, your current AUM in the portfolio?
Sure. Currently, we're at $125 million. As I've mentioned before, there's a lot of churn in the portfolio, so it's moving every day up and down, up and down. But right now, we're at about $125.
So how many loans would comprise your portfolio currently?
Right now we're at, I'll tell you in 1 second, 475 loans.
Okay. So what would the average size be then?
258,977.
Wow. Pretty precise.
Yeah. Well, I got my notes down. I just finished my month end reporting for the end of April. So I got them at my fingertips.
Okay. So what would be the largest loan that you have on your books right now?
Probably I think we went through that too, because we just renewed our insurance policies. Our largest loan on the books is a $1.6 million.
Okay. And what would your LTV be approximately?
Yeah, our average LTV on a weighted basis is 70.4%.
Okay. And these are all first mortgages that you have?
No, 69.5% are first mortgages and 30.5% are second mortgages.
Oh, okay. All right.
And when we do a second, we'll only go behind a bank or a credit union. We won't go behind another MIC or anything like that. It's always behind a major bank or a credit union.
Okay. Are you still primarily in the GTA area? I know originally that's what you focused on, but have you branched out at all?
Yeah, 68% of the portfolio is in the GTA, but about 12% of the book is in the greater Hamilton area, 7% in the Kitchener-Waterloo, Cambridge-Guelph area, 7% greater Barrie, 5% in the kind of greater Niagara area, and, around 1% in the greater Ottawa area.
Oh, okay. So do you actually have originators in those areas or?
We have three business development managers that we have kind of the province divided up. We only go as far north. We'll go as far east as Ottawa. We don't really do Kingston or Belleville. We kind of start back up again at Bowmanville. We go as far north as Orillia. And then we go as far west as Windsor, but basically we go west to London and then we stop at London and then we'll do Windsor. We don't do like Chatham or Sarnia or anything like that. And then we go around the lake, Burlington, Hamilton, Stony Creek, Grimsby, all the way to Niagara Falls, Fort Erie, and St. Catharines.
Okay. So how many people do you have on your team now?
Right now, we have 18 people on the team. Unfortunately, one person died, as I mentioned to you, 6 weeks ago. He was only 40. He was very sad. And then we had another person just retire last month.
Okay. Any plans to add or replace those people at the
present
time? Yeah,
we're currently looking for another underwriter. So we're seeing how that goes. An underwriter or two, we'll see how that, but we want to get the right person, right? And with the lockdown, it's kind of hard because we're not going to hire somebody and have them work from home to start. They got to be in the office.
Okay. So how's your team comprised? How many originators, how many back office people?
So right now we have three people as business development managers. Then we have, five people in underwriting, and then we have three back office people, And then the rest would be accounting and senior management.
Okay. All right. So I'm kind of curious about the deal flow now. Given the current market, are there plenty of deals coming available, or how are you sourcing your deals?
So our main source is exclusively through the mortgage broker network.
Okay.
That's our main source of originations currently. That's been, you know, we've been going very good on that. Like, our best month ever on origination was last month. This month looking like our second best month, or possibly our best month again. And that's because we've increased our marketing efforts with the broker network. So what we focus on, our underwriters focus on dealing with the existing mortgage brokers that have, you know, that have dealt with us in the past and have closed deals, and they keep working them. Our business development managers, their goal is to bring on people who have never dealt with us. So they have to go out and call people who they know are active mortgage brokers or agents, but have never done a deal with us to get them into the circle. So that's how we keep growing our business. And we've been doing very well at bringing on new brokers who have never dealt with us in the past. And, you know, I always say, once they come to us and they try and they close a deal with us, you know, our system is so efficient and seamless and easy. I always say they become believers once they close one deal, that like we're the easiest people to deal with. So that's where we've been getting our big growth out of. We also have started a direct-to-consumer initiative under a different brand. The brand's called Custom Capital Lending. And we market consumers directly. We've done some radio ads. We're doing Facebook, Instagram, and Google AdWords. We're meeting with a marketing firm next week to maybe expand that strategically, because we think there's a big opportunity with going direct to consumer as well.
So what do you think the capacity limitation is at this point in time for your group?
Right now we can keep growing. Like that's not the capacity. We're completely paperless from cradle to grave. We were since we started. We're very seamless. I think we're one of the only, or maybe there's one other MEC that has a partnership with First Canadian Title. First Canadian Title is the largest and oldest title insurance company in North America. So that creates a lot of seamlessness with us and also reduces staff count. Like, if I didn't have the partnership with them, I would need at least two more staff members. So they instruct the lawyer on our behalf. They collect all the documents. They review them. We review them. We wire them the money. They in turn disperse it to the lawyer. But they also give us the added protection of title insurance. They insure us against any title issues, the insurance against any fraud. And then they also do all the follow-up with the lawyers for documentation. We don't have to do that. So that mm-hmm. creates a tremendous amount of efficiency by doing something like that.
So when you look at your capacity, I mean, you have a high turnover. So your average loan is a year, right?
Yeah, our average loan is a year. And we've got about, you know, anywhere from, you know, 25 to 40% churn rate every year. Depending on how things go. You know, we always say we're a parking lot, right? People come to us because they've hit some speed bump in their life, whether it's they're self-employed and they can't prove their income to the satisfaction of the bank, or they've had some credit challenges, or their servicing ratios don't meet the bank mark. But, you know, sometimes a year or two or three, they're able to correct those things and then go back to the bank. So I always say, like, we're a parking lot. So that's one of the reasons we do get a lot of churn.
Okay. So with COVID, did you have any major problems with COVID, with people being out of work or people not being able to service their loans, any defaults?
Yeah, so our strategy was a bit different than the banks and some of the other players out there. We decided right from the beginning that we wouldn't do any payment deferrals. We would say to people, look, we'll work on a payment plan with you, but we're not doing payment deferrals for 6 months or 3 months or that. We'll say, you know, if your payment's $1,000 a month, let's work out a strategy that can work here. So maybe you pay $250 a week, or maybe you pay $200 a week or $250 every other week. Like, we wanted to keep people engaged. Like, you know, everybody was getting, you know, people were getting served. A lot of people were still working. The vast majority of people that applied for the payment deferrals with the bank didn't need the payment deferrals. You know, they could have kept making their payments. What they, you know, talking to various people, there was different strategies on people, what reason people did it. One was they said, geez, my mortgage rate's only, you know, 2% or whatever. That's cheap money. I'm going to defer those payments. I'm going to take that cash and pay off my credit cards because that makes sense. Or maybe I'm going to renovate my basement or do some home improvements or can pay off other debts, right? Because it made sense. So a lot of people did think that the payment deferrals for various reasons, but I personally believe the vast majority of payment deferrals were done for not because they were in a money crunch. They were doing it because they saw better use for those funds because the mortgage rate was so cheap. And I think further proof of that is, you know, this pandemic now is going into month, 14, and the banks have stopped the payment deferral programs and arrears haven't spiked at all with anybody. You're not seeing any big spike in arrears. So we took the approach that we weren't going to do payment deferrals. We were going to have them on a payment plan, and it worked out great. We only had two people that were real pains, and they fought like dogs, and eventually we basically got them off the books.
Okay. Let's turn now to the marketplace. I mean, real estate has been going through the roof. Single family houses, and I guess that's your specialty, I guess, is single family. Correct. You don't do condos or anything of that nature.
We do high rise condos, but the vast majority, like 93-94% of our book is owner occupied. So even when they're condos, people are living in them as their principal residence. And you know, we're very particular on the condos, which ones we'll lend on, loan to values, things of that nature.
Okay. So I know in some city centers, the condo values have actually declined a little bit, and the single family homes have really soared. Is that the case in Toronto, or is that, what are you experiencing in the areas in which you're lending?
Yeah, so condo, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, I put out a letter to shareholders saying that I believe that houses under $1 million, detached, semis, and townhouses would remain solid. I thought that they might even experience a bit of an uptick. I didn't anticipate this kind of uptick, but I was very confident in those values. I said the upper end market, you know, the over $1 million might have a leveling off, but I think it'll be stable. And I said I felt that the condo market over a 12 to 18 month period could have a retraction of something like 20% of values, right? Mm. So I was wrong on the condos. There was a bit of a value pullback in downtown condos. They might have come off about 10% over the year, but they're starting to creep back up again. So the condo market wasn't impacted as much as I thought it would be. I was wrong on that one. And I was wrong on the housing. I thought it would be stable to improve slightly, but it boomed.
Yeah.
Because right at the beginning of the pandemic, when I sorted through all the numbers, the vast majority of people that lost their jobs, it was something like 63%, were making minimum wage or minimum wage plus $2 or something. So the people in that category are basically renters. They're not moving the needle on the housing market. So that's why I felt condos were going to basically go back, because I thought, you know, these are renters, they're renting condos, they'll either move back with family, or they will start, like, you know, taking on roommates and things, so there'll be a much more vacancy. The owners of the condos are much more resilient and much more have a lot of equity, and I think have more cash, so that didn't get hit as hard as I did. But I was very confident in the housing market, you know.
Mm-hmm. So given the restrictions that we've seen or led to believe regarding business openings in Ontario, how has that impacted your borrowers, in the sense that my understanding is most of the people who come to you quite often are small business people. They've got into trouble one way or the other. And but now with the lockdown the way it is in Ontario, a lot of these people are probably unemployed or their businesses are not open. So what has that done to your marketplace?
A number of our people are self-employed, but for some reason, some of their businesses are doing better than ever. I was talking to a contractor client of ours, and he said when this thing first started, oh my God, I started this thing 7 years ago. I thought I was going to go back to my first year numbers. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm having the best year of my life. I can't keep up with the work. So there's some people that are just doing fantastic, the self-employed, right? If you're running a hair salon, it's tough, but these people get creative too. They'll go to your house, so you might have got a haircut for $75, a lady's haircut. Now you say, okay, I'll come to your house, but it's $150 and it's cash. So, you know what I mean? So they're collecting CERB and they're also doing these cash deals at people's houses. So people could, what I've always found, because I've been doing this for 35 years, the last recession, the big real estate recession in this province was really the early 90s when residential values dropped 25% and commercial values dropped 50%. What I found then is owner-occupied homes, homeowners become very, very resilient in tough times. I always say, first of all, there's a big emotional attachment to people's homes. They're entrenched in the community. It's where their family lives. The kids go to school in the neighborhood. You know what I mean? It's more important. I always say even when values are dropping, people believe their neighbor's house has dropped in value. They don't believe their own house has dropped in value. Somehow their house has managed to increase in value, even though their neighbor's has it. I don't know why people think that, but they do. I found people become very resilient. They take on a second job. They go to family for help. They take on a boarder or a tenant. They do whatever they have to do, dip into savings. They'll do whatever they have to do to keep that house going. So, we haven't seen that pullback in values. We've seen the opposite. So, and then, people are working from home, so their expenses are less, most people commute into work. There's no GO train costs. GO train costs. I have people working here that were paying $475 a month for GO train. Now they're sitting at home working and that cost is gone. They're not going out to eat. They're not going on vacations. That's just money going in the bank. They don't have to buy clothes. Well, first of all, there's nowhere to buy clothes. you don't need clothes. You can sit in your tracksuit all day and work. You know what I mean? Not getting haircuts, That's why I think that's why these people aren't doing as bad as people think. That's why things are doing okay. The government's giving out money, people are still working, and they have a lot less expenses.
What about interest rates? We've seen some activity recently in interest rates. Has that really impacted anything?
Just a small blip. I think rates are incredibly low. It's almost free money when you factor in inflation. And you have to remember, people are getting mortgages at the bank, it's going through a stress test, right? So they have to qualify at a rate point at 4.79, which as of June 1st, that's going to move up to 5.25%. So they, even though they're getting a rate of 2% or 2.5%, they have to qualify at 5.25%. So rate increases, quarter, half or so isn't going to have any meaningful impact on the on the market. What the rates do is every time the rate goes up a bit, it just pulls less people out of the circle that can buy, right? Or reduces their buying power. It's just, when values were going up and there was all this thing in the papers where, the government needs to do something to quiet the market down, to slow it down and all this stuff. They need to do this, they need to do that. My view was they didn't need to do anything because as values keep increasing, it's like in rates increasing. Every time the values keep going up, a big chunk of people no longer qualify or have to go at a cheaper house. So the market will just naturally slow down because of affordability, right? If you can afford a mortgage for 500 But then all of a sudden, the values keep going up, so that buying power is reduced, and you say, "Well, I'd rather rent than buy that if I only qualify for 500." You don't buy then, right? Yeah. Like, so it's not like I gotta buy and I'm willing to live in a slum to buy. Like, people do have a benchmark. So when values keep going up, they'll just say, "Oh, okay, I'm out. I'll keep renting." Yeah. That's what slows the market down.
Are you noticing any macro trends or any trends in your specific area that you lend that are worthy of note?
No, I do notice that people, you know, moving to these smaller towns, which we generally avoid. I do starting to feel there's a leveling off now. I do see that values are leveling. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the odd exception in certain hot areas, but the overall market, I can feel the leveling now. This is not this irrational exuberance where I got to get in. It seems to be, to me, it feels like it's starting to level a bit. And that's, I think, because of the prices, how much they've gone up, it's just pushed a lot of people out. And they said, like, I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is sort of a technical question, I guess, or more of an operational question. But when you go, when someone comes to you to borrow money, who does your appraisal? Do you have in-house appraisers? Use external?
We use third-party appraisers, and mm-hmm. we have an approved appraiser list on our website. That the brokers can, and we have it broken down geographically, obviously. Like, we don't want an Ottawa appraiser appraising a Toronto house, right? And then, but then, even though we use a third party appraiser, you know, we always say anybody can have a bad day, even though they're on the approved list. So we have this triple check methodology that we go through the appraisal, and, you know, sometimes we don't agree. So if we don't agree, we'll go back to the appraiser and say, look, we don't agree with your value. Here's some of the data we have. You know, what do you think? Sometimes they'll look at it and say, yeah, you know what, you're right. We're maybe a bit optimistic on this, and we'll go with the lower number. Sometimes, you know, they just say, no, I'm right, and here's some more evidence why we are right. And we say, okay, maybe you are. And then sometimes we just agree to disagree. But if we agree to disagree, we always use our number, which will be lower.
Yeah, okay. I think that's pretty well covers everything that I wanted to ask on my end. I'll give you the last word. Is there anything that you think our listeners need to be aware of or consider?
No, I think that, you know, real estate ebbs and flows all the time. Like, I think it's a long-term game. If you're looking to get rich quick, I don't think, you know, some people have recently, but I don't think that's the game. It's ebbs and flows. Values go up, values go down. But what I know is, you know, our model is lending on owner-occupied single-family dwellings that are highly marketable. And if you focus on that, you know, people work hard to keep their homes. Good times, bad times, right? Like, people become very resourceful. And that's our model. And the key to this business is discipline. And, you know, I always say it's not a sexy business. It's blocking and tackling. You know, focus on the real estate, making sure you have the number right. Don't deviate from your model. And then on the admin side, stay disciplined to your process, and how you manage your business. Like, it's, unfortunately, it's not a sexy business. It is what it is, but the sexiness is making the money, right?
Yeah.
Just staying disciplined.
Making continuous rate of return with some high degree of certainty.
Because losing money sucks.
Yeah, exactly. It does that. Well, Nick, I want to thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
I look forward to our next conversation.
That'd be great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.